Session 104. This is going to be the first part, and we're going to call it Balancing Distortions. Let's begin. In this session, like I said in the past, we begin the ending of the material in terms of personal material, because the next couple of sessions, including this one, are going to be all personal material. But also, as I promised, there's going to be information, because of the nature of the dialogue between Don and Ra, that is helpful for us to understand a little bit more how our path unfolds and the little things that we find. And like I said, even though the conversation doesn't go into the nitty-gritty of evolution and everything else that we are used to, we're talking on the same vein. So even if it's personal material, there's some stuff that we can get out of here. In any case, we are ready to begin with this session. I don't have much to say, but there was a month in between these two sessions, 103 and 104. That's something that we have been mentioning as part of the history of the material and how spaced out the sessions were at the end. So I just wanted to mention that. And we're going to begin with the first question that we have here, which it's going to bring us into a couple of questions about reducing distortions or balancing distortions, and then we're going to begin the conversation about cats, or the cat Gandalf itself, and we'll get to that. We're going to finish that conversation in the next episode, part two. So let's begin with this. The first question is, as usual, Don asking, could you first please give me the condition of the instrument? And Ra says, the readings are somewhat less distorted towards physical bankruptcy and vital energy loss than at the previous asking. There is still considerable bias in these readings. I'm not sure what they mean by bias in these readings, but they are less distorted towards depletion, let's say. Don, in question two, says, the instrument would like to know what's the optimum amount of aerobics, walking, and whirlpool exercises for the best condition at this time. And so before we dive into the answer of this question, just a refresher, Carla is doing her best at this point to maintain a physical body that is capable of maintaining the contact. Of course, you know, for personal reasons, but we know Carla. She was very dedicated and devoted to the service of the Ra contact and to Don. So these two things show us that the main reason why Carla was doing this was because she wanted to keep Don happy. And what made Don really happy was the Ra contact. So that was her dedication and her martyrdom. Syndrome, as I like to call it, was also a factor here. So it was a very delicate thing to balance in terms of how much of that service you can provide, how much of it you actually do, how much are you willing to sacrifice, which in the long run is going to lessen the amount of dedication that he can put into. So all these things, right? And that's what Carlo is going through. So physical exercise and diet was, of course, part of health in general and improving her condition. So that's what we are dealing with here. Also, I failed to mention that, of course, it's recommended that you go read the commentary on book 5, or if you go to lawofone.info, Toby Wheelock's website, you can also read it there directly in the session, as opposed to going into book 5 and so on. And I think I had something else to say. No, that's it. That's all I'm going to say for now. But yeah, go read the commentary on Jim and Carla about this session and some of the questions that Ra gave. And yeah, let's continue with Ra's answer here in question number 2. Ra says, "We shall answer in 2 ways. Firstly, to speak to the general case which pertains to this instrument in varying degree, each form of exercise is well accomplished approximately 3 to 4 times per your week. The amount of exercise, all quantified as 1, is approximately 1 hour per diurnal period." So I think I'm a little bit confused. Let me just reread it because it seems that Ra says, okay, you can exercise 3 to 4 times a week, and the amount of exercise, all quantified in one sum, is 1 hour. So does that mean 15 to 20 minutes exercise? It seems, right? That's the aerobic exercise, or as we also call it, cardio. Same thing. I'm going to throw in, of course, my superficial knowledge in training, or actually the superficial part of my knowledge in training, which is what pertains here. Aerobic means with oxygen. And so any aerobic exercise, for those of you who are interested in understanding how, you know, these two modalities of training work, aerobic or aerobic, I always pronounce it strange, I know. That's why I just call it cardio. We all do, right? So cardio is any exercise that uses, of course, the body, and in its intensity is sustained for a long period of time. This period of time is determined by exceeding what? 3 minutes, maybe 4 minutes. So here are the examples. If you walk, that is definitely some cardio or aerobic exercise. If you jog, that's also. If you climb, also. You know, all these exercises or movements of the body that can be sustained for longer than 3 minutes and to the capacity that you're capable of. Some people go for hours, and that's still exercise with oxygen. Now, anaerobic exercise is when there is no oxygen. Funny enough, you may be surprised to know that when you lift weights, you're not using oxygen, not in the muscle. Yes, there must be some exchange there, but it's not the force of lifting the weight is not a sustained exercise, and that's why you deplete yourself within a minute or two, depending on the tension of the weight, or you can do this also with elastic bands and so on. Just anything that is unbearable for more than a minute, I would say, or 2 minutes, and your muscle is already tired. So that's a form of exercise. And the difference between the two is that aerobic exercise is just for, as we know it, for the heart. Not quite for the heart alone, but that's the one that is being exercised the most. Just because I'm in this vein, and I should have called this episode Nutrition and Training Part 2, but just because I'm in this vein, and I know this is helpful for a lot of people, when you engage in aerobic exercise, there is a heart rate. You might have seen it as THR, target heart rate. You want to maintain that heart rate at a specific, depending on your age, so please do your homework. Depending on your age, you want to keep it at a certain pace. Why? Because if you just walk, yes, your heart is beating obviously faster than you would if you were just sitting. So you're walking, your heart is beating. Okay, yeah, great. That's a sort of exercise for the heart. But maybe, I'm just going to throw a guess, like in my example, it goes up to 80 heart beats per minute. But if I start jogging, then it would climb over 100. You see, and it's still sustained. there are factors here. The reason why you can't jog for more than 5-7 minutes if you're untrained is because you don't have the capacity yet, but you develop it pretty fast within a couple of sessions. You'll see that your heart adapts fast. But the amount of time doesn't really matter. It's just that you push the limits of yourself, and we're going to find part of that information here in Ross material, so I'm not so far departed from from the topic. Maybe this will help actually to understand that, and it definitely will. So, all right, stay with me here. Cardiovascular exercise should be around, yes, whatever amount of time you can, always pushing the limit when you can. But I would say in a 100, just a little bit over 100 heart beats per minute. And like I said, this depends on your age. The older you are, the fewer heartbeats should be, you know, your rate. But it goes gradually, like one heartbeat less every per year. I'm just being thorough here. Whereas anaerobic exercise, or we call it lifting weights, but like I said, weights doesn't account for elastic bands, for example, which you can do, or, you know, calisthenics. These are forms to a degree, you know, these are depending on your conditioning, the amount of muscle mass and strength that you have. It can be, you know, a form of building muscle. And that's the key difference, which is something that to me, obviously Carla had a huge deficit of muscle mass. Muscle mass is important because muscle mass is alive, you know, and it's a healthy addition to the body to a certain extent, of course. We bodybuilders used to think of more muscle, but the body doesn't want more muscle. It's cumbersome. You know, we just do it for the aesthetics and the sport and so on, which is kind of silly sport. Me being an ex-bodybuilder, I know. And to think of the people who use hormones to increase their muscle mass even further, then they go even beyond healthy, of course. I was never enticed to do such thing, but I understand the people that does and do it. I have nothing against them. I'm just saying that, you know, it's a huge sacrifice. I actually honor them for doing it, because that's a huge sacrifice. I wasn't willing to do that. Not for the sport. It was fun, you know, to just build muscle naturally, but yeah, just covering all of that for no reason. In any case, lifting weights or anaerobic exercise is a form of higher intensity for shorter periods of time, and which, just like cardiovascular exercise, it's meant to push your limits. Why am I saying this? Because if you're just lifting weights and you're not, you know, feeling tired at the end, you're not reaching that point of failure, then you may not be doing much. And speaking of failure, for those of you who are gym goers, and if you're going to failure all the time, that's another way to ruin your progress. You always want to be conservative and moderate. You want to get to the limits, but don't push it all the time. Reaching failure is appropriate sometimes, not all the time, and you can certainly train and build more muscle without reaching failure ever. But it's a useful measure. This is the smart way and the smart approach to things. I find that there's either, on one extreme, people who don't get to the higher intensities that they need, and on the other side of the spectrum, people who get there every day on every set that they lift. And it's not a smart way to go in either direction. Moderation, the middle way. See, Gautama was right even here. So okay, Carla had to do 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes every day, not every day, but 3 to 4 times a week. And I think that would cover her needs for aerobic exercise. I think I'm getting better at pronouncing that word. So, Ross says, we now answer in a second way, distorted in this response to the duple conditions of yellow ray, physical difficulty and mind complex distortion. The swirling waters then must be neat, be viewed as being appropriate 4 to 5 of your times per week, the walking and the exercising as much as desired by the entity. The total of these should in no case exceed 90 minutes per diurnal period. So, I think here's where I'm a bit confused, because they say that walking as much as you want, but the total of all these should in no case exceed 90 minutes per diurnal period. So maybe what they are referring here to is walking and being in the swirling waters, which apparently was a struggle for, believe it or not, Carla wasn't relaxing. Carla said that she felt that she had to, I think, put weight on herself so she wouldn't float in the water because she was so tiny and thin. But yeah, do not exceed 90 minutes. That's what I understand. And there are further indications here, so let's go back to the slide. I love this thing that I have now to switch my slides. Thank you, Gary. Ra continues and says, the yellow ray physical body has been experiencing that which is called lupoid changes in much tissue and muscle, off muscle, I correct myself, and some of the organs as well. The exercise regains the wasting physical muscular strength. In some ways, the walking is the more appropriate exercise due to the proximity of the entity to second density creatures, particularly your trees. However, the habitation you enjoy does not offer such opportunity and instead offers the proximity to creations of mind, body, spirit complexes. So they're mentioning again her lupoid rheumatosis, rheumatoid condition, which, no, erythematosus is what she had. Maybe rheumatoid as well. No, as far as I know, lupoid is rheumatosus. All right, I'm confused. I know that lupoid erythematosus, I know that's the one that gets, I mess up the names so much. but that's the one that just your immune system as is, you know, the lupoid, what do you call it, or lupus in general, is affecting the body. It's an autoimmune disease that attacks tissues in the body, particularly organs, and it seems muscle as well. The exercise regains the wasting physical muscular strength. So this is how the exercise, I don't think that the lupus, I mean, it does affect indirectly the wasting of muscle because it's attacking, you know, the tissue itself, but I don't think, I mean, it's not like you're not supposed to exercise if you have this. To the contrary, as Ra suggests, you know, the exercise regains the muscle that you have lost. So, especially in Carla. Fun fact here, by the way, if we're talking about muscle gain and strength and all of this, let's take two, subject A and subject B. Subject A is untrained, has very little muscle mass, somebody like Carla, but let's say she's healthy and she can go through, you know, rigorous training. And then there is subject B, who is fully trained at a pretty decent muscle mass and has been training for years. Subject A will be able to progress much faster and with so many more results than subject B, because the body wants that muscle. It wants to be the body. Everybody is different, but everybody wants to have a well-balanced amount of muscle mass. And if you don't have it, your body will want to regain it pretty fast. Whereas when you have a specific amount of muscle, just to maintain it is a struggle because the body doesn't want it. That's the truth of it. And that's why bodybuilders struggle so much, because the body wants to get rid of the muscle. And to maintain it, you have to do a lot of rigorous training and eat properly and so on. So both extremes, again, the body doesn't want. So depending on where you are in terms of muscle mass, I would suggest that you try to find, you know, the appropriate balance that your body wants. And like I said, you know, this doesn't have to be a rigorous training, but it does require some sort of exercise. Mostly in our times now, where there is much less activity than before. But just so you know, if you're untrained, you will easily gain muscle mass. Body fat is a different subject. Body fat, it's kind of a contentious point, but I believe that obviously there is a healthy amount of body fat. I think bodybuilders, or let's just put it this way, the standard that we look, you know, the model that we look, is probably too skinny. We need a little bit of fat, unless, you know, you are into remaining fit and fully, you know, muscled and so on, and that's okay. But just for the general, you know, population, I think a healthy amount of body fat is needed, but it's not obviously getting into the overweight. Overweight, you kind of know it. So, all right, section or segment number two is done. The other part of Raw is that Carla could walk, and she would enjoy basically walking in nature, but where they live, I remember looking at the map, and it was the place where they live, it was fully urbanized, so houses everywhere. That's what Ra meant by saying the habitation you enjoy does not offer such opportunity, and instead offers the proximity of creations of mind-body-spirit complexes. So yeah, our constructions, our houses and industrial buildings and so on. I think this is the last part of this answer. Nope, there's more. Ra says, this does not feed the mental emotional needs of this entity, although it produces the same physical result. The exercise fulfills more of the mental emotional need due to the entity's fondness for rhythmic expressions of the body, such as those found in athletic endeavors, derivative of the artifact system, which is known among your peoples as the dance. There's a joke here, because it took Ra like 28 words to say that Carla loves dancing. That's what they meant there. And at the beginning they said that walking does not feed her love to walk in nature, but it does produce the effect of the physical body. So it's very different to walk on a treadmill than it is to walk in nature. You can see the differences. I don't even have to elaborate more there. But the exercise fulfills her desires to dance, because Carla loved dancing. And if you read her commentary on this session, you will find more information about her talking about dancing and music and so on. Now, finally, last part. Ross says, we suggest the support group encourage any exercise except that which exceeds the time limit, which is already far beyond the physical limitations of this body complex. It is the way of distortion that in order to balance a distortion, one must accentuate it. Thusly, the overwearing of the body may, if correctly motivated, produce a lack of deficit, at which juncture the lesser exercise limitation should be put into practice. So let me decode all of this here, because it sounds so confusing. First of all, they suggest that they encourage any exercise except those that are exceeding the limits of the time that they gave. And which are beyond the physical limitations of her body. In essence, don't overtrain. Train as much as you can. Now, in this way, the rest of what they say is, you can see how we balance a distortion. So, if I have a distortion towards weakness in the body, in this case, strength, guess what? I'm going to weaken myself more. Why? Because that's the way to balance it. Sounds counterintuitive, right? But it isn't. That's what we do. When we engage in physical training, we are weakening the body in that direction. It doesn't matter if it's cardiovascular or lifting weights, we're weakening. How do you feel after exercising? Weak. How do you feel after exercising for weeks? Stronger. Not immediately after exercising, although we may feel a big rush of energy. But that's how we balance the body. And funny enough, this also works for the mind. So in order to improve or strengthen a weakness, we must go into that weakness and we must increase it. Let me explain what I mean by this. I remember listening about this in Buddhism a while ago, where it is recommended that if you have a mental distortion, let's use Ra's language, that you go into that distortion and exaggerate it and go into it, and then you will feel that it's not so weak at all. Ra even suggests this, or maybe it's in another channeling of the Confederation, where they say that go to that trauma or something that you're trying to deal with and mentally accentuate it more and more and more until it becomes ridiculous, literally absurd. Then somehow you will feel the balance that will be offered by your own intelligence. Trust me, it's a beautiful way to do it, because what we would do is either we get on board with it and so it remains the same, or we reject it and of course it remains the same, it seems like it goes away and it comes back. Whether as opposed to if you go into it, you'll know much more about it and you'll see that it's not so powerful over you. It's too general what I'm saying, but it depends of course on what you're dealing with. So in this case we're talking about training and what happens. So that's in essence what they're saying here when they say the overwearing of the body may produce a lack of deficit, right? Overwearing the body, getting it tired, exhausted, may produce a lack of deficit. What is a lack of deficit? An increase. At which juncture, right, at that point when there is a lack of deficit or an increase of capacity, then we can reduce the exercise, is what they mean at the end. The lesser exercise limitations should be put into practice. Yes, so you can introduce more moderate exercise after a while. Let me explain to you how this happens, for example, in building muscle. Say you want to build 5 pounds of muscle. You will train really hard to get there, and then after that, to maintain it, you don't have to train that hard. In fact, you don't even have to train 70% of what you used to train. You may train 60% or even 50% and you'll be able to maintain that. So yeah, in so many ways we can see this. And that's it. I'm done with this part. Let's go to the next question. Don says in question 3, the instrument has determined that the use or the unwise use of her will is its use without the joy and faith components and constitutes martyrdom. Would Ra comment on that, please? So here we're talking about Carla's figuring out that her unwise use of her will is to, in essence, act without joy and faith, but in sacrifice to do something that she feels that is right. So what would Ra say here? Ra says, we are pleased that the entity has pondered that which has been given. We would comment as follows. It is salubrious, which means healthy, for the instrument to have knowledge which is less distorted towards martyrdom and which is rich in promise. The entity which is strong to think shall either be strong to act, or that which it has shall be removed. Thus, manifestation of knowledge is an area to be examined by the instrument. So it's beautiful that Carla came to this realization, because this is what she was lacking, the joy and faith of her activity just for the sake of sacrificing herself for what she considered to be the greater good of her environment, Don, raw contact, and so on. And of course, helping people, which is something else that she added there, that went to visit her and, you know, doing things around the house and so on. So notice how Ra says that it is healthy for Carla to have knowledge which is less distorted towards martyrdom and which is rich in promise. That's a way of applauding, you know, the movement from excessive use of heart moving up to wisdom. That is a way to raise the kundalini in this particular aspect of her life. And then they say that the entity which is strong to think shall either be strong to act, or that which has been, that which it has shall be removed. So as Jim said in the commentary, use it or lose it type of thing. Thus, manifestation of knowledge is an area to be examined by the instrument. So yeah, this knowledge, this wisdom, something that Carla, of course, was here to work on. Next part. Ra says, we would further note that balancing, which in this entity's case is best accomplished in analysis and manifestation seated with the contemplation of silence, may be strengthened by manifested silence and lack of routine activity. We may go no further than this recommendation of regularized leisure and desire that the entity discover the fundamental truths of these distortions as it will. So what I see here is there is a balancing which is best accomplished in analysis and manifestation of meditation, in essence, seeking that silence. And of course, moving from the routine activity. And yeah, so this is something that I find, of course, very dear to me, because we think that we have to move our mind in a certain direction if we want to balance whatever it is that we have on the other direction. And there's always this desire to do. Always activity, balancing an activity of the mind with more activity of the mind. And I find that this is not as efficient as allowing silence to somehow, because we cannot know what's happening, we think that everything that we do has an effect and is the only thing that has an effect. It is true that everything that we do has an effect, but we largely ignore that abiding in silence is what does most of things. Rather, everything comes from there. So returning to that place of silence plays a crucial role for us to become the change, as opposed to trying to be the change. And like Ra said, I won't go any more further into this recommendation, because it's something that we all have to discover. You see how they say? They desire that Carla discover the fundamental truths of these distortions as it will. Nobody can really say. You know, nobody can really say what you will find, how you will react, how you will change through this. we can only point to you, you know, just get there, you know, just remain there and see the changes for yourself. You're not going to become more of this or less of that. You're just going to see the results for yourself. And this is why meditation is such a global thing. And anybody, it doesn't matter what their background is, what their beliefs are, anybody and everybody, just like exercise and good diet is recommended for everybody else, meditation is the same thing. It's not a religious thing. It's not about a belief. It's about health, mental health. Do it, and you can continue to do and think and feel whatever you want and are, but you will feel a huge difference in your sense of being and your ability to deal with anything, really. So I don't have to, I'm preaching to the choir here, of course, and it's, I don't have to, I'm saying redundant things here, but just maybe overemphasizing a point that we already know. Let's move to the next question. Don says in question 4, is there anything further that we can do to help the instrument's stomach and back spasm problem? Ross says, the greatest aid is already being given to the fullest. The encouragement of the instrument to refrain from the oil-fried nature of foodstuffs in its intake is helpful. Cheerful harmony is helpful. The spasms must subside as a function of the entity's indigo ray work and, to some extent, the recommendations made in response to a previous query. The definitive refraining from overstepping the already swollen boundaries of physical limitation is recommended. The infection remains and the symptoms are now far less medicable, the entity having chosen the catalyst. So, okay, several things to help with her stomach. Stop eating fried food, or refrain from eating it. I don't know if she was doing it, but refraining from that. Cheerful harmony is helpful. I think that's a big one that Ra always commented. The spasms will subside as a function of her balancing indigo ray, which is self-worth, something that we talked about in the last session. Go listen to that or read it. Carla made a commentary about this, about buying clothes for her and so on. So feeling unworthy, it doesn't matter how, on in which way do you feel unworthy. That's just a way of denying, you know, the divinity of the creator, which is really you. So you're buying more into the image of yourself rather than the creator being fully worthy of the experience that you're having. It's almost like you're taking the experience of the creator for yourself as an image, as an ego, and saying, nope, you don't deserve this, God. The definitive refraining from overstepping the already swollen boundaries. This is the recommendation for physical activity. So don't overtrain. Don't overdo it. Keep it in mind, of course, that Carla wasn't just exercising. She was doing things around the house. And that had an impact, of course. That's movement. That is a form of activity. And the infection remained because she chose to deal with the catalysts, which... some of us actually do. If you have an infection, you just let be, unless it's the last infection I treated with antibiotics was Lyme's disease. And that's because that's a strong one. That's the perk of living in the forest. Sometimes you get these things. So let's move now to the section about Gandalf the White, I mean the cat. Question 5. Don says, can you tell us what is wrong with our cat Gandalf's eyes? Ra says, the one known as Gandalf nears the end of its incarnation. Its eyesight dims and the aquas, I'm pretty sure I'm pronouncing this wrong, but it has to do with aqua for those of you listening and not reading. The aqueous membrane becomes tough, so the watery membrane of the eye becomes tough. This is not a comfortable circumstance, but is one which causes the entity no true discomfort. So, since we only have like 20 minutes or so, we're going to get into probably question 12 or so. I'm not sure. We made the transition now into the conversation on the cat Gandalf. The rest of the session is going to be about this. Part 2 is going to cover this feeling that we have towards animals, particularly pets, which are like children to us. And we're going to see the conversation between Don and Ra in two ways. The first one is the obvious, very obvious, loving compassion and kindness that Don had towards the cats. And not only Don, of course, but Carla and Jim. So we're going to see that, and that's going to be a beautiful part of it. But also we're going to see Ra's decision not to go any further into talking about this, and also the suggestions that sometimes may sound indifferent, but it's only because it's inviting us to a higher degree in which we can understand this. It's tough. It's really difficult to deal with the emotional charge of having a pet. But sometimes, not sometimes, but most of the time with our pets, we're going to reach this point, and we all know it. They're going to die, and we're going to be there. So it's a delicate and beautiful balance in which we can appreciate even more our love for life, because a pet is life. A pet is the universe. So we're going to see that develop even more, but we're probably going to start here. Now, what was happening with Gandalf at this point? Well, as Ra said from the first answer, Gandalf is nearing the end of its incarnation, meaning it's going to die soon. Its eyesight, in essence, has what I believe is a cataract. A cataract. I think that's what it is. That is the dimming of that aqueous membrane, which is the crystalline. Again, I think this is what it is because I actually had an operation. I had a cataract due to a trauma when I was a kid. Got a nail in my eye and almost lost it, but developed a cataract, and then they operated, and then I was supposed to see better. Guess what? I don't see better. My eyesight is the same. So yeah, I kind of see like Gandalf right now. Not the wizard, but the cat. Always seen like this from my right eye. Little trivia there for you. So this is not a comfortable circumstance. Sounds funny. Sounds like Ra is contradicting itself here. This is not a comfortable circumstance, but is one which causes the entity no true discomfort. But yeah, it's just that it's not a truly uncomfortable circumstance. It's just that it's not a comfortable one. You'll see why. We're probably going to get to that in this episode. But yeah, this cataract was developing and the cat couldn't see well. And of course, that's a problem for him to move around. So let's move into a couple more questions. Question 6, Don says, is there anything that we can do to alleviate this situation? Ra says, there is a course of therapy which would aid the situation. However, we do not recommend it, as the condition is more benign than the treatment. So there is a treatment, but we don't recommend it because the condition is a lot more benign than the treatment. But Don, question 7, says, I don't understand. Could you explain what you meant? Ra says, a doctor of the allopathic tradition would give you the drops for the eyes. The cat would find the experience of being confined while the drops were given more distorted than the discomfort it now feels but is able to largely ignore. So, again, what's happening with the cat? cat's basically dying. It's ending its incarnation. Can we do something for it, for the eyes, because it doesn't see well? Yes, you can. There's a treatment, and you can use these this course of eye drops. Okay. Why does Ra not recommend it? Think about the experience of the cat, and we'll get possibly in this episode to the treatment itself. If not, spoiler alert, it was a lot of drops that they had to give to the cat. The experience of the cat wasn't that uncomfortable. I mean, it was losing sight. I remember having a dog that kind of lost sight to a certain degree, and he was fine. I mean, he was just not as mobile, and he would have to get close. I mean, you get old, that's fine, you know, you just get old. That's not such a terrible condition. So yeah, he was able to largely ignore it. It didn't affect him that much. However, the treatment, even though it was good for its eyes, would give him the experience daily, possibly three times a day. We don't get to see the full treatment or directions, but it would be very uncomfortable, the experience, especially at old age. So this is very similar to, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to step on anybody's toes, but the experience of being in a hospital. My dad had to go through this in the last year of his life, and I was hoping he didn't die in a hospital. Or my mom, also in her last year, or last couple of weeks, actually. That's how aggressive this disease was. But yeah, you know, trying to put tubes and to maintain somebody alive, like, what kind of experience is that for the last weeks of your life? No, you want to die, you know, as, I mean, I don't want to speak for anybody, but everybody is willing, I mean, it's open to have whatever experience they have. I like Alan Watts' explanation of this, like, we should have all kinds of rooms and scenarios and environments for people to die in, you know, it should be a sort of, yes, I want to pick this way to go, you know, I'm dying, so I'm going to celebrate, I'm just going to meditate with people, or whatever it is, I don't know, we should think about this, instead of saying, like, no, we have to keep you alive for as long as possible, because that's just what we doctors do, we cannot allow that you die, you know, no doctor, especially nowadays, can tell you, like, all right, listen, what's happening is that you're dying, and all you need to do is just get comfortable and die. You know, they're going to say, no, we have to do this. Their job is to keep you alive. And you can't blame them for that. That's what they do. So as a society, I think is where we need to, you know, take that direction. And of course, individually, we can always say, well, I'm ready to die. You know, this is it. And we kind of know it. I think we know. We just deny it. I remember my dad denying it for his last couple of weeks, and I told him, I love you, man, but, you know, if this is what you choose, this is what's happening, you know, don't be afraid of it, let's talk about it, you know, let's be comfortable around the scenario, because it's not going well. So that seemed to hit a good, you know, note in him, and yeah, a couple of weeks later, he ended up dying in a very peaceful way. And I think we need to talk about death a lot more. It's such a taboo in our society. So again, Ra, in this direction, they're saying, in essence, the treatment would be a lot more disturbing to the cat than just allowing him to keep his condition. That's it. Don questions further. Says, can the cat see at all? Ra says, yes. Don asks, well, does it seem that the cat will lose all of its vision in the near future? Or is the cat very near death? Ra says, the one known as Gandalf will not lose eyesight or life on most probability vortices for three of your seasons, approximately. So I'm thinking that seasons are 3 months. So maybe another 9 months, maybe a full year. I'm not sure. I remember from Carla's commentary that the cat started losing mobility, like he couldn't walk anymore, and they would carry him to the box so it could do its thing, and to the plate so it could eat. Like, this is the part that is beautiful about us, that we do willingly, you know, for these pets. Like, I don't know to which extent I'll do everything for Oliver, but as long as I can keep him happy, I don't care. I'll just do everything. Everything to keep him alive and happy until the point where it's just, you know, that's the end of him. And I don't say this without a huge contraction in my heart, because that's what we feel. We feel love. Sadness is love. It needs to be channeled as love, or understood as love, which is not a denying of sadness. I'm not going to be sad. I'm not going to be sad. You know, it's an incarnation and so on. Like, all this babbling here doesn't do anything. You feel the love, you feel the contraction, you feel sad, you cry, and you just love it, you know. Speaking from experience. So, and again, that experience that I'm mentioning is my dad's departure, which was the last one that I had to go through. And it was, you just see the love in there. You just have to see it. You can't see it otherwise. Okay, so Gandalf would survive for a couple more months. And again, I want you to see Don's beautiful approach to this, and just his feelings invested in the cat. And you'll keep seeing it in the next episode. Don says in question 10, I feel very bad about the condition of the cat and really would like to help it. Can Ra suggest anything that we can do to help out Gandalf? Ra says, yes. Don says, what would that be? Ra says, firstly, we would suggest that possibility probability vortices include that. Let me reread this. We would suggest that possibility probability vortices include those in which the entity known as Gandalf has a lengthier incarnation. Secondly, we would suggest that this entity goes to a graduation if it desires. Otherwise, it may choose to reincarnate to be with those companions it has loved. Thirdly, the entity known to you as Betty has the means of making the entity more distorted towards comfort, discomfort. We'll find out about Betty now. First, they are saying that there is a possibility for Gandalf to live longer than the three seasons that they suggested, I think. Second, that the entity is already a mind-body-spirit complex, meaning that it could choose to reincarnate as a human, or it could easily go back as a cat, it seems. So it looks like this is possible. I'm not sure how this works. We've never heard anything about this in the raw material, but it seems that a mind-body-spirit complex that is already graduated to third density can go back to second density. I guess this parallels the Bigfoot explanation in the raw material, where they were third density, but that they decided to, nope, let's restrain ourselves from destroying this planet as well and incarnate as this ape-looking creatures. I guess it mirrors that too. But yeah, so the last is Betty, and let's get to that. Don says in question 12, do you want to tell me who you mean by Betty? I'm not sure who that is and what Betty would do. Ra doesn't seem to be interested in this conversation and says the one known as Carla has this information. And then Don says, well, I was concerned about the possibility of moving. If we did move, this would make it very difficult for Gandalf to find his way around a new place if he can't see. Does he see enough to be able to find his way around a new environment? Ra says, the vision is less than adequate, but is nearly accommodated by a keen sense of smell and of hearing. The companions and the furnishings being familiar, a new milieu would be reasonably expected to be satisfactorily acceptable within a short period of your space-time. So we're going to end it at this. Here, in essence, they're just talking about the moving to another house, and of course Dawn once again thinking about Gandalf. Like, this is how much we love pets, right? We think about them all the time. It's not like we think about ourselves and then, you know, we plan things and then, oh yeah, we have to consider the animal. We're always thinking about them. Just to give you a little personal story to relate to, we never leave our dog for more than, not even a day. Like, we may leave in the morning and come back at night. That's the longest we leave him. And our heart is, of course, a little contracted there. You know, it just feels like, oh, we're leaving him alone. So yeah, we don't travel and leave him alone for days. Even with, what do they call it? Pet sitter, like a babysitter. I don't know. He's just part of us. And he can travel also because he's too anxious and he gets too nervous. And it's last time we did that, he had like literally PTSD. He couldn't sleep that night and was still trembling. That was a terrible thing. So, and that was only a 7-hour trip, which was long. But yeah, he's not a car dog. He's a puppy. He just likes to be here in his house. So yeah, we think about them. And Ross says that it's fine. You know, they would move and they'll find a new environment acceptable within a short period of time because of the people and the furnishings. That's all they need. And this is what our dogs do. You know, you move to a different place and they're fine. As long as you're there and they find certain things. I had to do this with my dog, or we had to do it when we moved. We sold the house and we moved to my father's house for a couple of months after my mother passed. And we were there for a couple of months, and it took him a couple of days to adapt himself to the new house, but there he was. He was happy and doing his things. So, yeah. Conclusions. I think I'll expand on this maybe in the next session, or episode, rather, finishing this session. But you know, this probably has not much to do with the raw material or anything, but I can't help but think that our love for animals is so great, and it keeps coming to me that, say what you will about America, United States, but man, do we love animals here. I come from a country, Venezuela, where I did not see this. There is a sort of, it's not to say that people don't like animals, it's just that the culture doesn't reflect that very well, and we're just terrible, you know, with what we do with animals. At least we have done that in the past. I'm not sure how it is in other countries, but here in the US there is such a care for all, I mean, I'm talking about wild animals. Where I live, I just saw a post in a Facebook group where they took a picture of a fox that looked a little scrawny and had something. I couldn't detect this, but somebody said it looks like he has a sort of disease and is a wild animal. And they were asking, you know, where they spotted him, because they could wrap the medicine that they need in some food or something they would actually take and, you know, cure him. I don't think I've seen this ever. You know, like this kind of kindness towards animals. And I think it's because they reflect to us the innocence, the, especially wild animals, the freedom of, you know, being there. I know I'm mixing US with freedom. I'm sorry. I did not mean that. But yeah, there is, we in any place we see animals, and that's it's a reminder of innocence and freedom and a desire to know themselves. That's what animals are doing, aren't they? They're the creator beginning to know itself as I, as me, as self. And it's such a beautiful depiction in nature. I think that's what we love about it. And the combined movements and dance of all these animals and trees, that's what makes nature nature. And we appreciate that. So I guess this is a recognition and honoring of the US people. It's strange. I don't know if I consider myself an American, Venezuelan. I don't even know what I consider myself, but I just recognize things as they are. And there's such a recognition to say that America is an example for at least how to treat animals collectively, culturally. Like, you can get in trouble here in jail just by killing the wrong animal with the wrong intentions, of course. And yeah, and at the same time, you know, we deal with nature in a, I know there's always a better way to deal with nature because we're civilized humans, quote unquote. And so we're not very careful with the environment. We can always do better, but at least the attitude that I see here, the respect and the love for animals, wild animals, and especially pets, it's amazing. It's just inspiring. And I think the whole world can learn about this. I've heard other things in Europe too, that the way they care about animals is beautiful. I don't know about other places. I am sorry. I'm just speaking from my limited knowledge, and I just wanted to put that out there. I'm done, though, with this session. Episode. I keep saying it's an session. Here's where I thank you for following this far. I appreciate you being in this path, in this knowledge. If you want to get involved with what I do, always in the description you can find my course, which I never talk about my course. I should make videos about my course or my teaching itself so you know a little bit more about it. I promise I'll do more of that, but yes, it's a method of self-inquiry for you to go into pure meditation and to know yourself. That's it. It's, I don't offer something complex, I promise. It's just the simplest thing we should embark on. And the people who have taken this course, they can appreciate the simplicity and yet the efficacy of knowing yourself, of using self-knowledge to understand what the ego is, what the whole law of one is, what Jesus meant, and everything. Knowing yourself is the foundation. So again, I'm just leaving it up there. In the description is my course. If you want to contact me on Instagram, somebody asked me for my email long ago. Also asked me for that. If you don't have Instagram, if you still want to contact me, that's my teaching. That's what I love doing. And if you want to join the weekly calls that we have on this path and also Law of One seminars, Telegram channel, you'll find the link in the description as well. All right. Have a good day or good night, whatever you are. And we're done here. I'll see you in part 2 of session 104.